WBRFFX Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons today, we're going to revisit history. We're going back 3 years ago to June when the Supreme Court rendered their decision in the Kelo case. It was a devastating decision. It was a decision that really had the whole country in an uproar. And the Institute for Justice wants to make sure that we don't forget. So I've received a number of emails. Some of you may have heard from them as well. I got one from Chip Mellor, who's president and general counsel for the Institute for Justice. And here's what Chip says. 3 years ago this month, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that New London, Connecticut could take Suzette Kelo's Little Pink Cottage in order to try to generate more tax revenue. Now, 3 years after the decision and $78 million in taxpayer money later, nothing has happened with the land. All that's left are brown, barren fields. Yet the travesty here is not only that the lives of Suzette and her neighbors were unnecessarily uprooted, but that this type of thing is happening all over the country. Don't let the fights of these courageous individuals go in vain. Sign up now at www.ij.org/Kelo Day to be one of 10,000 people who will make a small donation to the Institute for Justice this coming Monday, June 23rd, to send a message to policymakers and the media that our homes and businesses are not political capital that can be bandied about for personal and political gain. And then I also received an email from Suzette Kelo saying June 23rd is the third anniversary of the infamous Kelo eminent domain case, the U.S. Supreme Court decision that allowed perfectly well-maintained private homes like mine to be taken by the government and handed over for someone else's private use. Under that ruling, any home could be taken and destroyed to make way for high-end condos. Any small business could be bulldozed to make way for a big box store, and tragically, that is what is happening in too many parts of our country. I'd like your help to put an end to that abuse of eminent domain once and for all. IJ helped defend my home and my neighbors' homes when they were threatened by eminent domain for private gain. IJ continues to defend other homeowners and small property owners in similar fights. 100% of the money raised on this site on that day will be used to fight eminent domain abuse, the use of eminent domain for private development projects. We recognize that under the Constitution, eminent domain can be used for genuine public use projects, such as a courthouse or to build a highway. But when government power is used to take land from one private property owner, only to hand that land over to another private person for their private profit, that is an abuse of government's power. Our goal is to earn 10,000 donations for IJ on that one day, Monday, June 23rd. Leading up to the Kelo argument, the Institute for Justice documented that 10,000 American property owners had their property threatened or actually taken by eminent domain for private use in just a five-year period. That 10,000 figure inspired IJ and me to seek 10,000 donations from across the country to send a message to those in power that we care about our homes and that the abuse of eminent domain must be stopped. We're not seeking large contributions on this date, just $25, $50, or $100. Even a $5 contribution will make a difference and add greatly to the ambitious numbers we're trying to achieve on that day. So, folks, if you're willing to fight to preserve your property values and your property and your sanity from your neighbors, then I think it's incumbent on us to go a little bit beyond that and make sure that we don't allow the government to just take our property for whatever reason they want. So I would urge you, I'm going to do that. I would urge you all to go to www.ij.org/Kelo Day and make a small contribution, whatever you can. The idea, I think, is to hear from 10,000 people. Just imagine what your legislators would do if they heard from 10,000 people, or they knew that 10,000 people were really upset and wanted them to do something. Do you think that might make a difference? So anyway, send a small contribution. And thanks again for listening to On the Commons.
Joining me on the Commons today is Suzette Kilo. Suzette has been at the center of a lot of controversy today. Suzette, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You are at risk of losing your home, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's correct.
You have now, would you give us a brief description, a little bit of a history of what happened to you?
Well, this started in 1998 when first off, Pfizer came to town. Let's just put it that way. There was a 28-acre piece next to my property, like a half a mile or so. And then Pfizer moved over here. And it was shortly after that the city came out with a municipal development plan to make way for a 90-acre development, and then the homes would have to go. And that's pretty much how it started back in 1998.
And so you've been fighting this for 7 years now.
Absolutely, yeah, that's correct.
And how long have you owned your home?
Well, actually, and the sad thing about that is I had just purchased the house actually in the summer of 1997. So, even though I was familiar with the neighborhood because I had been raised a few streets over from here, I had just bought the property.
So you bought the house not knowing that, and this was your dream home, I read.
Well, absolutely. This is, it's got a beautiful water view, and it was a nice middle class, neighborhood. Everybody went to work every day, and there was kids and mowing their lawns, and just a regular middle class neighborhood. And absolutely, it's a beautiful house, and it's been on the water.
And, so you've got a water view on the river.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So well, it's at the mouth of the Thames. Yeah. At the mouth where the it's the mouth of the Thames, and where the Long Island Sound and the Atlantic Ocean meet. So it's the beginning there. Yeah.
It sounds like everybody's dream.
It is. This is true. You know, people come here now from all over the country, and they drive down over the hill where I live, and they say, I wouldn't leave either.
So you bought this house, and did I read someplace that you did a lot of fixing up and renovating to the house?
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we did the house, yeah. Everything was new in the house, from the concrete in the basement floor to the shingles on the roof. Actually, when the basement was dug out to lay the floor, they found cannonballs in the basement because the house where it is located is right across the street from where Benedict Arnold fought in the Revolutionary War.
So it's a historical site as well.
I'm sorry?
It's a historical site as well.
Oh, yes. I think it is. Yeah, well, certainly is now, anyway.
Well, yeah, now it's well known. Would you describe the neighborhood for us? What does it look like?
Now?
Yes.
Oh, now it looks like Beirut, bombed out.
You're kidding.
No, absolutely not. I mean, they tore buildings down, and some of the rubble, well, good part of the rubble they left behind. They didn't even clear the lots. They just left everything. And
who did this?
The New London Development Corporation.
So they did get a number of houses.
Oh yes, so they came in and started acquiring properties prior to the approval of the municipal development plan, and people sold out of fear, and they came in. We tried to stop them from tearing down the houses that had been sold, you know, just so we could try to save the neighborhood. But they came in and they just leveled everything. It was horrible. It was like the Gestapo's coming through. It really was. It was unbelievable.
When you bought your house, it did not look like Beirut.
No, oh no, no. When I bought the house, it was a nice little neighborhood. No, it was. We had 80 over, probably 80 properties here. Maybe 88, maybe 82. But in that neighborhood, homes here. Mostly single family, couple, a couple two families, but mostly single family homes.
So you moved into this neighborhood, and I think I saw a picture on CNN or one of the TV stations, I think, did a story a year or two ago, and I seem to remember that it was the fall and you had some beautiful mature trees and, you know, the beautiful foliage that you get in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looked so picturesque and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very nice.
And so I was really surprised when I asked you to describe it. That's what I'm expecting, is mature trees and beautiful streets. And
oh, no, they cut down most of the trees. I mean, some of the bigger ones, you know, they didn't work, obviously, on properties. But, no, they went right through. They clear cut. Everything's gone.
So all these old houses are gone?
Absolutely. They're all gone.
How many are left?
There's 11 properties left.
There's 11?
11 properties and 7 homeowners.
And so you guys are the ones who are fighting this.
Correct.
And you want to keep it. You want to stay there.
Yes.
I don't blame you. I would want to stay, you know, if I'd bought my dream home, and it sounds absolutely gorgeous. What, describe to us what it's been like for you. I mean, this must have been living with this on a day-to-day basis, not knowing if you're going to lose your home.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing if you're going to have to move, not knowing anything.
Well, it's, you know, really, you know, 7 years of uncertainty is a long time, and 7 years of fighting is a very long time, and certainly to fight for 7 years and then get, you know, I often say to people, the city of New London's kicked me in the teeth so many times, it's a wonder I got any teeth. To get kicked down again by the United States Supreme Court was just absolutely devastating. I mean, we had no idea that that the people, you know, the Supreme Court justices would do this to us. I mean, we were just totally flabbergasted. And, you know, and like I said, 7 years of uncertainty and 7 years of fighting is a long time. And, you know, and as you know, in the beginning, you know, most of the people in the city were against us. But as time went on, the people in the city figured out that, you know, the NLDC were nothing but a bunch of carpetbaggers and you know, and came over to our side. But it's been a long 7 years.
Well, it must be, and because you must have been living in limbo this whole time, not knowing what was going to happen, where you were going to go, whether you were going to win, whether you were going to get to keep your house, or whether you would ultimately lose. But I was absolutely shocked and horrified when the decision came down. I thought, how can 5 out of 9 people be so abusive and stupid to rule that way?
Mm-hmm.
And when I called you, the first words out of your mouth was, "We're not giving up. We're going to fight."
That's right. And you know, I think because we were so devastated when the decision first came down, but really with the support of the American people coming forward and supporting us, it really has given us renewed strength, and we're going to continue to fight, and hopefully, you know, hopefully we will prevail.
Well, I certainly hope you will. What can... okay, I guess you're going to be taking this now back to the Connecticut Supreme Court.
I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do, but I don't think they're going to go to the Connecticut Supreme Court. No, I think if we do anything, we'll, you know, we may go to the United States Supreme Court, but I don't have any idea if our attorneys are going to do that as of yet. They have to research the law. And but what we, you know, what we can try to do is try to get the legislature, you know, and I'm wondering, you know, when the decision came out, if that was really the Supreme Court's idea to have each state have its own eminent domain laws and to clarify so that, you know, this can't be done. So,
because you ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court because you lost at the in Connecticut at
correct.
The state level, right?
Correct. That's correct.
Geez, and I understand, and I mean, I've been reading so much about this, Suzette, but I understand that at some point one of your legislators in Connecticut made a motion to reconvene to enact legislation that would protect or sort of curtail the abuses of eminent domain, and that motion failed?
That's correct.
I know that there was an effort at the U.S., in the U.S. House, the Senate,
mm-hmm.
to also come up with federal laws, and
right.
that motion also failed. What does that...
It did fail because I didn't know it had failed. I know that they had put it in, but...
Yeah, apparently it had failed, but he vows that he's going to come back with an even stronger and broader bill. But what does that tell you about the people that were elected to protect us?
They're doing a poor job. I really think the people have to take a stand and say that we're not going to stand for this anymore. That, you know, you can't take somebody's private property and give it to another private person because they can either create more tax revenue or, you know, or whatever these people think they're doing. There isn't even a plan for this area. They
there isn't?
Want it.
They just want the property.
They want the property.
There's no plan. There's nothing in place.
There's no plan for my block. They have a plan, their municipal development plan. They have 90 acres to build whatever they want to build. We have never once tried to stop the development. We have never said we didn't want the development. We simply said, can we stay and enjoy the development? We never said, don't come here. We welcome the development. Our houses stand on little over an acre and a quarter. They have 90 acres to build whatever they want to build.
And so they're looking at, what, a grand total of an additional 15 acres if they get the last 11 houses?
No, we're only on an acre.
You're on all 11 houses?
Yes, a little over an acre and a quarter.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought each house was on an acre and a quarter.
No. We have just, you know, this is a city lots. We just got little postage stamp lots.
Oh, and so that's what this whole thing is about, is this last acre and a quarter.
Yeah, and there's 90 acres here. There's more than enough land for them to build whatever they want to build. They simply do not want us here. They don't want to look at us. Whoever they is, whether it's Pfizer's or whoever.
None of this, I'm so glad you agreed to come on, because none of this has come out I've been reading and downloading a ton of stuff on this case.
Mm-hmm.
But none of this has come out before that I recall. So there's 90 acres there, 11 houses sit on an acre and a quarter. So the sum total of what you have is an acre and a quarter.
Yeah.
And there's no plans,
There's no plan for our block, absolutely.
There's nothing there. They just want the property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to build something that's for the public use. It's just to get rid of you.
Correct. That's correct.
Oh, boy. And your tax dollars at work for you, hey, Suzette?
Yeah. when the reporter was here the other day, one of the local for our town paper, I said to her, I says, why don't you go ask the city council, the people that we elected into office to protect us and serve us, ask them what they're going to do to protect us from the New London Development Corporation. The city of New London created the New London Development Corporation and then gave them the power of eminent domain. They created the monster.
Now, the New London Development Corporation, that's a private entity, right?
Correct.
And yet it was created by the government.
Created by the town government, yeah. Or even the state government, because, you know, a lot of this stuff, this was Governor Rowland's plan. I don't know if you know now, but Governor Rowland is no longer our governor. He's in prison in Pennsylvania.
Oh, he is?
For corruption. And this was one of his, plans. You know, to come in here, level this neighborhood, and build this huge development.
Oh, and the guy's in prison for corruption.
Oh, yes, that's where he is. He's in yeah.
Oh, boy.
He's learning how to be a Boy Scout somewhere.
Have you heard of a guy by the name of Clements? Is it Clements? No. His name is Logan Darrell Clements.
No.
This guy, I think, is in California, and he sent a fax to the New Hampshire, New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah.
City Council, saying, you know, I want Justice David Souter's property so that I can build a hotel called...
I guess he's a big developer, yeah.
He's in Freestar Media. His thing is Freestar Media, but he wants to acquire through eminent domain Justice Souter's property, so that he could build a hotel as, I guess, a monument to this decision, and call it Lost Liberty.
It's just interesting to see if it will prevail, even though, you know, I certainly am against eminent domain for economic development. I understand the philosophy behind what he's doing.
Well, I guess it's going to be a matter of, is it, you know, is what's good for the goose good for the gander as well, or
right.
is this all of a sudden going to be, hey, you know, it's okay for the little people out there, but not for me. Now, you said, and you're quoted as saying that you did this to protect the rights of the middle class.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, when this started out, you know, I have to admit, when this started out, this was about me in saving my house. And my handful of neighbors down here, we banded together and we said, okay, this is what we're going to do. But this has turned out to be, I had no idea in the whole wide world that anything like this could happen, that this could turn into such a monumental, I mean, I had no idea. And like I said, in the beginning, this was just about me. But
now, this
is no longer about me. This is about every poor person, every minority, every middle-class American in this country who is no longer going to have any property rights. And even for the rich, there's always somebody richer.
That's true. What can we do as ordinary citizens, the working class, basically, what can we do to help, and what can we do to make sure that you win whatever the next battlefield ends up being?
Well, I think really the thing that I really want to ask people to do is to send letters to the editor of our local newspaper, which is the Day, and then forward them to the city councilors and the mayor and the city manager and the governor. I mean, really, I think that's really, at this point, there is a website, www.ij.org, and that would be our attorney's website in Washington. And they have what they call the Castle Coalition, which is an organization they formed after they took our house by eminent domain too. And that's a whole collection of people that are fighting eminent domain throughout the country.
Yeah, we have the coordinator, Stephen Anderson, is going to be joining us during the second half. Unfortunately, he couldn't be with us in the studio. I was hoping to be able to get him in on the conversation, but. We'll talk to him during the second half of the show.
And that'd be great.
Get some more information from him. That's right. But I just, you know, I just wanted to know if there was anything that we could do. When I talked to you the other day, you said that you got a lot of encouragement because so many people called and wrote and contacted you, basically, and said.
Oh, this is true, and I'm still getting letters and phone calls even today. I've had a ton of people stop at the house today. I've had people come with their families to take pictures of themselves with their families, saying that they want to teach their children, you know, that it's wrong to do stuff like this. Be able to show them the picture where people in this country lost their rights, their property rights. And again, as I asked, if people could write to the editor of the Day and show their support that way, would be tremendous.
I mean, we can do that. It would be nice if there was a website someplace where we could just upload all of these letters. If anybody wants to send them to me, to my website, it's on the Commons. At Cox.net, I will put them up on my webpage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then the website for the Day is www.theday.com. It's simply The Day.
The Day, this is the local newspaper?
Yes, it's the New London paper.
Okay, so you want people to write to the...
Letters to the editor,
Okay, theday.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you guys heard all this? Write to the editor of The Day. It's www.theday.com.
Yeah, www.theday.com.
And if you don't write that down, go to my website on thecommons.com, and I will make sure that the information is uploaded this evening, and you can send a letter to the editor then. How are your neighbors handling this? You seem to be very grounded.
Very what?
Grounded. I'm surprised. I don't know how many people would be able to handle this as well as you. I mean, you're the one in the media spotlight. It's your name up front, but this isn't just you. You have, like you said, six other homeowners, right?
Yes, there's six of us. Only seven of us together, counting me. Yes, so there's six more.
And how are they taking this?
Well, like I said, we were shocked by the decision, and you know, extremely disappointed. But really, what has carried us forward is the nation's outcry of the injustice of this of what's happened here. I mean, if the people that have been calling and writing is just tremendous, and that's really given us, renewed help to continue this battle. And really the strength to keep going on.
And your neighbors are going to stick with it.
Oh, absolutely.
So they're not ready to say. I mean, some of your neighbors are quite elderly. There's one that's in her later 80s.
Yes, Mrs. Derry, she was actually born here. She's 87 years old now. She's never lived any place else in her life but here.
And so the New London Development Corporation is quite willing to turf her out for no other reason than they want her land.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, so the New London Corporation wants to turf her out of her home for no other reason than they want her land.
That's correct.
Does she have the similar setup as you do with the views?
Oh, absolutely. We all do, yeah.
So you're all sort of on the water.
Yeah, we're across the street from a state park. Now, the park was created a couple of years ago. It was originally the Naval Underwater Sound Lab, because we have the sub base here, and when that closed. We have the fort from, as I mentioned earlier, from the Revolutionary War. There's a huge fort here, a granite fort, and the state came in and made a park. So I live across the street from one of the openings to the park, and Mrs. Derry lives across the street to the other opening on top of the hill. So we actually have a nice park here, and then beyond the park is the water. So it's, you know what I mean? It's not like we have a beach or anything, but it's.
But you've got a $1 million view, basically.
Yeah, it's a view, but we're also able to access that water because they put in, they put in fishing docks, and you know people can go fishing and stuff like that. So
you're getting something for your tax dollars right now.
I'm getting something. Is that what you said?
Yeah, for your tax dollars.
Yeah. but that's a state park. It's not like a city park, though.
It's a state park. Okay, so the city, fortunately, the city can't do anything about it.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want them to have anything. Let me put it this way. How much longer are you willing to just see this to the end?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even if it took another 7 years?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be great if it took another 7 years.
Because you'd get your house. But what about the quality of life that you're leading now?
Well, you know, we're a pretty tough bunch down here, I got to admit. And most of the time, things are pretty quiet. I mean, obviously, this is a big decision, and things are quite hectic now. But for the most part, we're just, ordinary citizens. And, you go to work every day and...
Yeah, but I mean, living under the cloud of uncertainty, basically, living in limbo, you don't know if you're going to be able to keep your house, you don't know if you're going to have to...
Oh, certainly that's added stress to us, but, we just keep plugging along, I don't know how, I don't know how we do it, but we're a pretty close group, too, which makes it good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, if like one of us is, get down about it or something, you can go over and talk to them and say, hey, let's go do this, we're going to do this, and, trying to, you know what I mean? So, like
so you have a very strong sense of community right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is very good. In the unlikely event, I really hope it doesn't happen. I hope that with the national uproar that's taking place, something is going to be decided and in your favor and very, very soon, so that you guys can go back to leading a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
But if that were not to happen, if you sort of exhausted every possible venue and you lost, what would you do then? Where would you go? Would you stay in that area? Or
well,
you
certainly wouldn't stay in town, absolutely not. I mean, and none of us will, as a matter of fact. You know, we don't spend any money in town now, with the exception of, a few businesses that I know support us keeping our homes. None of us spend any money here, and certainly I would never spend another dime in this town, let alone buy a house and pay taxes. Certainly not. Where would I would go? I don't have any idea. I don't know where I would go. I really don't.
How do the local businesses? You're boycotting some of them.
Mm-hmm.
What's the sense? The general sense in the city? Is it in favor or against you?
It's really kind of hard to tell, because it's the city of New London and the politics and everything. It's so incestual. And it's been like this for 75 years. I would say that the merchants downtown, which was a depressed area, and people are really trying to build it up. And I love downtown. Believe me, it's a waterfront downtown. It's got a beautiful pier, and I love the downtown. But it was very depressed. And at the time that the New London Development Corporation came in, they fed them the nonsense that if they tore down this neighborhood and Pfizer's came and all these shops came, that they would have more business. So a lot of people believed the carpetbaggers, so to speak, in the beginning. Some merchants have changed their mind. Some merchants still, want us out because they think they can sell more cups of coffee if we don't live here, for whatever reason that is. I don't know.
So 1.25 acre is going to be an economic boom to some of these merchants. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, basically, if they say that they need all this land, one of their attorneys was quoted as saying that we don't want these people here. We want the young Pfizer executives here. We don't want these people here. We want a better class of people than these people.
So it's discriminatory.
Oh, absolutely. This has been a class issue, as far as I'm concerned, since the beginning. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a registered nurse. Everybody down here is a professional person in a sense. Everybody goes to work and they pay their bills and they obey the law and they take care of the houses and the yards. And, we're regular Joes. But, and that's one of the attorneys that was said that they we were not wanted here, that they wanted the young Pfizer execs to come in, and that's what they want.
Wow. It would seem to me that would be discriminatory, and it would seem to me that it would violate some of the federal laws. Fair housing,
mm-hmm.
for instance, comes to mind.
Well, it's funny you should mention housing, so I'll let you know that they want to build, listen to this, market rate housing down here.
They want to build what?
Market rate housing.
What's that?
Market rate is how did they say it the other day? They said they wanted to put in low to middle income housing down here.
Low to middle income housing.
Right.
And they don't want you. They want low to middle income housing.
Right.
Well, it seems to me somebody's been smoking some funny stuff. Suzette, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons, we have Michael Cristofaro. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on your show.
For those of you who do not know, in case anybody out there does not know, Michael is one of the last two people who, in New London. He is part of the Kelo case. He is one of the plaintiffs in that case. And he is losing his house through eminent domain, and although Mike stood there and fought to the bitter end. Mike, you're going to, I guess this is the end of the road?
Presently it is the end of the road for our present house, but with some of the negotiations, we did retain some property ownership within the same area when it's available to us.
Can we maybe go back and recap a little bit just in case, just to refresh people? I mean, it seems like every time I have you or Suzette on, or any time we talk to anyone about eminent domain, I seem to learn a whole lot more. I think Americans have this notion that if you own property, the government can take it. Under the Constitution, they have to pay you just compensation, and they can use that property to build roads and schools and things that are going to be used for the public. But that's not what happened to you guys.
Well, no, and I think that's what everyone's assumption out there, that when your property is taken by eminent domain, that's what they plan on using it for. It's to help our nation grow. And when I say grow, that means, you know, with a new school, a highway, you know, to build reservoirs and different type of buildings like that, you know, fire department, police department. But today, it's a whole different story. If a municipality feels that they have a better use for your land, and it only has to be speculation, they could take your land, say, and let it sit there for 10 years and then give it to a developer, and you have no recourse. And that's what the U.S. Supreme Court basically said. If they feel they have a better use for your land, you better not even bother unpacking your bags when you move into your home, because they'll take it.
You say that it's basically on speculation. They're just speculating that maybe in 10 years we might find a better use for this land, therefore we're going to get you out now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even in Fort Trumbull, a lot of that was under speculation only. I mean, they're saying that if there's a possibility that we may have a plan for it, we could take your property.
And that's how many houses have been lost?
Well, with the remaining Kilo and myself, you're talking probably about 110, 120 homes.
So 120 people have been displaced, their land, their home, their memory. Everything has been taken for them on speculation, or some of them on speculation.
Right. Some of them, like where Suzette Kilo's home was, which they have renamed it because, you know, they don't want to put a name of a neighborhood, you know, back there again because that would be too sentimental. Now they just name it as Parcel 4A. Like it doesn't have any historical value.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Parcel 4A.
Exactly, and that's what the Suzette Kilo's block was considered. My block was considered Parcel 3C. You know, to people out there, well, parcel's a parcel, you know, who cares? It's not a neighborhood. It was a neighborhood. We had a striving neighborhood. Everyone knew them, each other. But now, like with Parcel 4A, which is Suzette Kilo's, they have no plans. There is no plans. And they wouldn't even let her or I stay on that parcel until there was a plan.
And because you would have agreed to be moved to that area?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the options that we presented, you know. Move all the remaining homeowners into one parcel, turn it into a marine time village, and, you know, it will complement the fort, because there's literally a real fort that was built in the early 1800s. Actually, 1700s, so late 1700s. And leave us alone. And the mayor's proposal was, okay, you want that? We'll allow you to move the house to one parcel, but we retain ownership of the land. And when the original property owner passes away, we take it back. Well, my dad was 81 years old. They were going to wait for him to die to steal the house from him again.
And so, jeez. So, in other words, and the house is in your dad's name, right?
Yes.
And so the house would have been moved and then taken away.
Right. Exactly. And our logic, Suzette and I, was, you know, Suzette, you know, is probably in her late 40s, early 50s. You know, she could be around for 30, 40, maybe even 50 years. You know, people are living longer.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, if you don't have any purpose for this land for 40 years, why not leave us alone and give us back our deed and let us have the inheritance right to pass the home down to our children?
Wasn't that part of the proposal from the governor, Governor Rell?
didn't she want you to be able to pass this on and to have the rights?
Yes, exactly. That's what Governor Rell's proposal was, but the city refused it. They refused flat out. They said no.
So, now, over the years, and because this is not something that's been, you know, that just recently happened, but over the years, many of your neighbors have either died off or they have settled with the city. And one of the things I don't think most Americans realize is that although the Constitution provides for just compensation, tell us a little bit about just compensation.
Well, educate
us, Mike.
Well, I mean, just compensation to me would mean that they would at least give you fair market value.
Right.
But that's not how they look at just compensation. They'll come in there and they'll praise it according to what your streetcar says. In other words, whatever is in City Hall on records, that's what they consider to be market value. Now, everyone out there knows that City Hall's tax records is not exactly what your property is worth. For instance, the property that I'm living in, they say it's only worth $180,000. Well, I know I could put it on the market and sell it for $290,000. But they'll come in and only offer you the $180,000 if you're lucky. In my father's case, they actually offered him 70% of the actual value that the city said it was worth. That was fair compensation.
Because one of the things, that, and I've learned a whole lot doing this show and talking to you and to Suzette and to a whole lot of other people while we've covered eminent domain, one of the things I've learned is that typically governments will come in and say, well, yeah, fair market value is when you can sell it at an arm's length transaction, but nobody is going to pay you that because the house is under is being condemned. And it does not have the same value. Therefore, the value today is, and it's considerably less than fair market value. And it's considerably less than the money, you know, you couldn't take that money and go and buy the same kind of house, could you?
No, absolutely not. Matter of fact, if you look at past history of eminent domain taken, people's homes that were usually taken, they were not able to buy the same style home or, you know, the size of home. They usually end up downsizing or going into a neighborhood that they would never have moved into because that's the only thing that they could afford now.
A lot of you, and I think that you told me before, that a lot of your neighbors, sort of at the beginning, the ones who settled and sold, were elderly people. They were in their 80s. They were in their 90s. They didn't have... You know, they were scared, they were threatened, and they accepted the first offer that the city made and were ended up homeless, right?
Well, I wouldn't say homeless, but, you know, they ended up buying something less than what they've had. A lot of them were threatened to the point where, you know, they felt their lives were in danger. I mean, even with my own family, I mean, they used to come and harass my mom and dad all hours of the day and telling them, if you don't take this offer, we're going to take your property by eminent domain and we're going to give you even less money.
Who was doing this?
Well, this was the people that were hired by the New London Development Corporation, the quasi-public entity that the state funneled all the money into to do the development in Fort Trumbull.
So this was the organization that was doing the dirty deed for the city of New London, right?
Absolutely, because the city councilors at the time, 1998-99, they turned over their power of eminent domain to a quasi-public entity, and this development corporation knew that they had the power of eminent domain, so they didn't have to act fairly to the property owners.
So I guess initially they'd come and they'd say, look, you know, we want to develop this area, we want your land, we want your house, and we're prepared to offer you $50,000, even though your house may be worth $250,000. And if you don't take this, and now I want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're saying, if you don't take this, then we have the power to condemn your property and take it by force, and then you'll get even less.
Exactly, and that's exactly what they used to do. I mean, originally they offered my parents $50,000 for a half-acre parcel in the city with a, you know, 10-room house, two-car garage, and telling them if they didn't take that offer, you're going to get less.
Wow. And your parents didn't buy into that?
No, we told them, you know, to go take a fly and leave. This is our home, and you're not telling us what to do with it.
We're talking to Michael Christopher. Michael is one of the last people in Fort Trumbull, Connecticut, whose house has been condemned through the powers of eminent domain. And he's had a long road to hoe here because this has been going on for a number of years. You've been in and out of court. You've lost all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court on this issue. It must have been a tremendously nerve-wracking time. A lot of stress and a lot of unknowns, right?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, the thing is, the property owners in Fort Trumbull lost in the U.S. Supreme Court, but the nation is who has really lost.
I agree.
Because they did not hold up, you know, they did not give us our property rights. They took them away.
Were you expecting that decision from the U.S. Supreme Court?
I wasn't expecting that decision. I was expecting something where it would not have made the property owners 100% happy, and it would have made the government 100% happy. It would have been something in between. But they didn't even give us that. They just stripped us of our property rights. And I can tell you that our forefathers never intended eminent domain to be used in this fashion.
I agree with you. I don't think that's what they had in mind when they wrote the Bill of Rights. You told me the last time you were on that there was a lot of threats, a lot of harassment, and you talked about the harassment earlier. You want to tell us a little bit about the type of treatment that you have endured?
Well, I mean, like, this has been going on for almost 10 years. I mean, so this over 10 years, it's been a lot of things that have gone on.
Wow.
You know.
This is 10 years old?
Well, just about. I mean, it basically started in 1997, so you're talking 9 years.
Yeah.
You know, they finally used eminent domain on us in 2000. But, you know, prior to 2000, we were fighting it, you know, to retain ownership of our home.
So what was happening prior to 2000? They were just trying to,
They would come around, you know, trying to buy the property from us. With the threats, you know, of eminent domain. They would come harassing us at all hours of the day. They would come in when my family was having our Sunday Italian dinner, come knocking on the door with the contracts in hand, telling them they don't have a choice but to sign, you know, the contracts. They would park the bulldozers, you know, directly across the street from us and point it like, you know, your house is next. You know, those kind of threats. They were just, you know, strictly harassment. Even up until the last 3 or 4 months, the city started doing financial terrorism.
The city?
Yeah, the city. They were basically saying that if we didn't get out, and that they would start filing evictions against the property owners, and with the evictions, you know, if we didn't meet the deadlines that they gave us, they basically passed at their city council meeting to start charging the property owners, Suzette and I, back use and occupancy fees totaling, for my family alone, all the fees would have been about $128,000.
Wait a minute. What kinds of fees are these?
According to them, because we no longer owned ownership of the home, but we've been living in the home. They said that we had to pay them a use and occupancy fee. So, and they came up with something like $1,200 a month, you know, times that by the last 6 years. And on top of that, they're saying that we had to pay them back taxes, which my family paid taxes on the property up until about 2003, until we finally said, well, if you're not going to put my father's name on the bill, then we're not going to pay the bill. So they wanted us to pay the back taxes, They wanted us to use an occupancy fee, which was going to total like $127,000. And then they were going to start charging us something like $1,000 a day in fines for every day that we remained on the property.
That's unbelievable. And who was doing, you know, who was bringing the bulldozers and threatening you? Was that the New London Development Corporation, or was that the actual city itself?
Well, you got to understand.
It's one and the same.
To me, it's one and the same.
Okay.
The city of New London instructed the NLDC to obtain these properties. NLDC decided to do whatever they wanted to make that happen. Okay? So that's what they were doing. I mean, they would tear down homes and not even tell property owners that they were doing it. And, you know,
How could they do that?
Excuse me?
How could they do that? The property owners wouldn't know? I mean, they'd be still living there?
No. I'm talking about, you know, like when they tore down my neighbor's home and they had moved out. They wouldn't tell us they were tearing the house down tomorrow. We would just get up in the morning and next thing you know, there's the bulldozer tearing the house down,
okay,
and all this dust and asbestos or whatever else is flying into your home. One of our neighbors, their daughters were doing their homework at the kitchen table, and the building next door almost fell right on the house where the two daughters were doing their homework.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of things that were going on.
And so it was real terrorism that was going on.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, you know, physical, mental, and financial.
Did you pay the... Did they actually force you to pay the $128,000?
No, but basically what happened was because Suzette and I settled 3 weeks ago,
okay,
they went back to city council meeting 2 weeks ago and rescinded the order. Because that was one of the negotiations that they couldn't charge us those fees.
So they were strong arming you.
Yes.
And they couldn't take your house because they'd already done that.
Exactly.
And
they knew that we wouldn't relinquish it, on our free will, that they would physically have to, throw us out.
The city of New London, I think you've got what, 5 council members on there.
Seven,
and 2 of them are very friendly towards you. I, in fact, had one of them on, Charles Frank.
Yes.
He said he ran for the city council because he was just really appalled at what was happening. Were they able in any way to sort of prevent some of the negative stuff that was going on, or were they outvoted all the time?
They were outvoted. You know, I mean, even the Republican that was on there, you know, turned around and said, you know, if I had the opportunity to do this all over, I would vote against it. And then the first opportunity he had to make things right, he comes out with a statement like, I know this is wrong, but I have to vote, to take your home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's like...
This is...
You got to be kidding me. You know, I mean, and when you have 5 individuals that...
I know this is wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway?
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah, and matter of fact, last week I was talking to the economic development coordinator in the city of New London, and he started telling me how there really wasn't anything going to be happening down in Fort Trumbull, and that, you know, the whole plan was just... It's a big lie.
The whole plan was a big lie.
Yeah, and that probably nothing would ever happen down there.
Describe the area to me. Describe Fort Trumbull. Describe the area that is supposed to be redeveloped. And I keep hearing about hotels and upscale condos and all of that wonderful stuff. What's happening? What's going to happen?
Well, right now, I mean, basically, it's a peninsula.
Okay.
You know, it's a piece of land about 50 acres, kind of jots out into the Atlantic Ocean, the river. Okay. It's, like I said, it's waterfront property. It's in a historical neighborhood. It was actually, like I said, a fort was built in the 1700s to protect the city from the British when they were coming down the river. So it's been there for the last, 300 years. This isn't what you should be tearing down. You're tearing down your past.
Yeah, I agree.
You should be preserving that, for future generations. It was an Irish neighborhood. It turned into an Italian neighborhood. And it pretty much stayed a majority of an Italian neighborhood up until probably the 60s to 70s, and where there was a mixture of class. There was, all levels of people living there. There were rich, middle class, lower class, everyone. But everyone looked after each other. It didn't make a difference if you had money or you had no money.
It was a true neighborhood.
Exactly. Your doors were never locked. Matter of fact, my nieces, when they were born, and my brother was living there, at 3 years old, she would walk down the stairs, walk in the backyard, go next door, and go to the lady's house that used to live next to us, our neighbor,
mm-hmm.
and, climb up to the second floor stairs, and they used to call her Nonnie, and she would, turn around and cook her up some soup, and she'll have lunch over there, and then she'll call my brother and say, don't worry about your daughter, she's over here.
That sounds like what we're all trying to get back to.
Exactly, and this is what they're taking people away from.
When I talked to Charles Frank, I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him, and he made the comment that he has seen this happen over time. He says they tear down real neighborhoods, which is what you guys sound like you have. And he says then they build up upscale, put in upscale condos in downscale projects.
This is the second time my family's gone through
America. That's true.
And where my family's first home sat,
mm-hmm.
which was, where they lost it 36 years ago, nothing's been built on it.
It's still sitting there.
It's still sitting there empty.
Is this still in New London?
Yes, right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
The city of New London has used eminent domain against its citizens in the past 60 years at least 5 times.
And they've just taken the land, and they've done for no reason at all.
For instance, that when we lost our first home, they took it for urban development, which was supposed to be for a seawall to, protect from flooding and things. They never built a seawall, but they destroyed, 200 homes. Most of the land sat vacant for about 10, 12 years, and then they turned it over to a developer, and on most of the land now sits office complex. So, in Fort Trumbull, yeah, they're planning on building these condos. They're planning on building 66 condos and 14 townhouses. And they're basically saying that we're not good enough to live there, but someone else is. That's the logic that they've given us.
That's the logic they've given you, huh? That's unbelievable. We're talking to Michael Cristofaro. Michael is one of the plaintiffs in the much talked about Kelo versus New London, Connecticut decision. He is one of the last holdouts. Unfortunately, there are no more. And when we come back, we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, the actual settlement and what your plans are now. Is that okay, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. I can't talk on all. They gave us a confidentiality clause, which I went to the city council last week and told them that this is wrong. The public needs to know exactly what's on these contracts. They were paid with state tax dollars, and the city should not try to, shut us up.
There is a confidentiality?
Yes, there is.
Okay, because we've talked about this before. And when I asked Charles Frank, he was not aware of it.
No, this is with us when the, I don't know when the last time we talked to Charles, but this is within the last 3 weeks.
This is within the last 3 weeks. Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.